This hour is brought to you by The Pint. It's Pint O'Clock Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. $5 beers, wine, and highballs. Eat, drink, repeat. The Pint.
It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
I think you, if there was a company for a collared shirt, I would give you $5,000 for a collared shirt post.
I rock a quality collared shirt.
With a button down.
Oh, man, I can bring it.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Well, I might end up jinxing myself here, but today I avoided a first. Because this has never happened to me before in my radio career. I thought I was going to be late getting here today. And I would be nervous anyway, but because of the two gentlemen that are riding shotgun this afternoon, I was terrified. Terrified. And I'll tell you why. That's not a slight on their broadcasting abilities. It's a slight on their punctuality in the past. Because the O-Dog's off for the week. Noodles is calling a game tonight. We have Jonas Siegel in here from The Athletic. We all know about Jonas and his Waze app and how many times he's been late in the past. And we got Craig in here. Craig,
I've never been late.
You've never been late, but you walk in at 3:59:59 at times. Because you're doing other things around the building. Yeah. Right? So
you could just send me a note. Really need you to be here early today.
No, it's fine. It's all good. I knew you'd be here. I'm not saying...
No, I know, but you could to ease your little concern, you could just say, Craig, got to be there earlier.
I maybe could have done that, but I was driving because there's a really crazy scene going on out in the east end of the city right now. I guess there was an armed bank robbery, and they caught the guys, and they started shooting at the cops, and like the 401 was completely shut down, and I was caught in...
From where? Where
the
was this
mess.
Happening?
It was out towards Ajax, I believe, into Whitby area.
Well, will Darren Dreger be able to get in?
I don't know, because Dregs and I are neighbors, pretty much. And Dregs gets here a little bit later, so he'll probably be able to make it, but he's in studio with us in the 6 p.m. hour.
I know.
But I have never been late for a radio show.
We'll really have to get an update from Dregs on this whole incident here.
But I was thinking today was going to be the day, and it would have been the Jonas Siegel and Craig Button show, and I would have been listening. That would have been quite the experience.
We could have had you call in.
Yeah, me listening. Anyway, good to see you guys. We're all here. It's all good.
Yeah.
We're coming off a pretty wild weekend.
Yes.
Did you guys get the chance to sit back and watch Raptors, Rockets, Leafs, Pens, Tiger do his thing?
I didn't get to see Raptors, Rockets. Certainly was mesmerized yesterday by Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. I mean, I think one of the most interesting things was Brent Snedeker talking about how energized he was by having Tiger back on the tour and like how it just, you could feel the energy there. So,
and he was chopping it up yesterday.
But I think like the fact remains is that Tiger's the draw.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget that ourselves, that he is in, when he's playing well. I mean, when he drained that 44-footer
on 17, and there was a great shot of Snedeker in the background, if you were watching, because Woods hit the putt, and the camera followed the ball to the hole, as it should have, but during the replay, they went back and showed the reaction of Tiger, and Tiger was kind of talking to the ball, saying, like, get there, get there, get there, and Snedeker was smiling behind him, like, staring at him, and when the ball went in, Snedeker almost started laughing with him, like, he was real close to a fist pump. Which I guess is acceptable, right? Like, these are independent contractors. It's not like you're on the other team.
Right.
And Snedeker had played himself out of contention. But you could tell Snedeker was like, let's do this. Like, let's birdie 18 and push this into a playoff. And it was great theater on 18.
Oh.
He just came up short. He didn't hit the putt.
Well, he came up short a couple of... when you start to look, and he'll look back at this. But do you know the fascinating thing when they were talking about that surgery that he had? And they were talking about how it's changed his rotation. And that Tiger now says he's able now to manage that. It's not the same as it was, but now he's able to play, understanding what that spinal fusion surgery did to him in terms of his rotation. I mean, you talk about having to change your rotation and still be able to do what he... Wow.
It's incredible. It was great to watch. It was too bad that he didn't end up winning.
Yeah.
Also too bad that Corey Connors, the Canadian, fell down the leaderboard. And you could see it on one. He wasn't going to have it. He bogeyed one. He was in the trees. Oh, then he kind of sculled one past the green. He's going to join us, though, in about a half an hour. We'll get his take on the whole experience.
Yeah.
Because even though he fell down the leaderboard, he was still leading a big tournament with Tiger Woods in it through 54 holes. Did you jump on the Tiger bandwagon, Jonas?
No, I considered it, but then I didn't.
You just have no interest ever.
No, but can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What is, like, it's obviously a redemption type of story. Is it redemption, like, for all the stuff that he had happen personally? Or is it redemption from all the injuries and the fact that he didn't play well? Is it both?
I think it's both.
Yeah, I would say it's more the latter. I mean, I always say this, Jonas. None of us come without flaws. And, you know, athletes, actors, people in the public spotlight. I mean, you know, we see them as performers and, you know, they have personal lives and everything. And certainly with, you know, Tiger's personal life, it was something. But, you know, I mean, the bottom line was he dominated golf from the moment he arrived. He dominated. And then all of a sudden he just went right off the cliff. And I think that, you know, I think the personal is a little bit of it, but I think him fighting back and going through the surgeries, and I mean, we saw some disasters here in the last 30 months.
Oh, he had the yips.
Yeah.
Like full blown Don Valley yips.
Chuck Knobloch?
Yeah. Like, honestly, like, what are you doing? You should be wearing jorts and Crocs on a Muni type of yips. Like,
oh, yeah.
You look awful.
But did you see what was he going into the tournament yesterday? 300 and.
Oh, he's way down the rankings.
Yeah, but he's in the top 100 now after finishing where he did.
Yes, I believe he is.
Yeah,
and now
he's
favored to win the Masters, as he should be if you consider the way that he's played the past couple of times out. He's playing again this weekend at Bay Hill.
So I have a question for Jonas. So you said you considered it, and then you didn't. What was the in the final analysis? What made you not tune in? I wasn't going to let you get off that easily.
That's fair. So I'm like you guys, and this is not a knock on you. I just don't enjoy watching golf. I just find it. I tried a couple years ago. I tried to watch one of the majors and tried to get into it, and it just didn't catch me.
You're not alone.
And
you're
so
in the majority
like,
of people.
Do I really want to sit and watch him? And it's slow, and it, or is there something else I'd rather watch?
Well, you're gonna have to come out and watch. Okay,
maybe I'd watch it live.
You and Mike Masters are gonna have to come out and watch.
Mark might watch. I don't know.
No, but you both have to come out. I figure that Mark can do the play by play, and you can just watch.
He actually was a play by play guy.
I know. He did the ping pong tournament at the World Junior Tournament,
which was very good.
It was brilliant. Anyway, I think he's gonna be doing Summer Olympics. Play-by-play at the ping pong.
As he should.
Anyway, but table tennis, I think they call it. I don't think they call it ping pong. Anyway, but I don't know if you know this, but Tessa Bonhomme and Kara Wagland are taking on Jeff O'Neill.
Really?
And did you know that Tessa Bonhomme can drive the ball 500 yards?
I did know she was a defenseman. I know that.
Yeah, you were aware of that question. And if you were on the ball.
I was chomping at the bit to get in there.
Yeah, that's where Masters lost the second round of trivia. You didn't know that Tessa was a defenseman. How could you not
know? How could you not know that? A right shot defenseman.
Yeah.
Well, and what's weird is Mark is like over prepared for everything. Like there is, including myself, there's no reporter who covers the Leafs who is like dissecting every angle. He sends out like this long email to producers every day about stories. Like he is invested, and that one he just booked.
I can only tell you this. You know, trivia was a big deal, and yeah, I know the Leafs are a big deal here, but he dropped the ball.
Thank you, Craig. I think that's a compliment to me as well.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it's a big compliment. I mean, you can say that he's over, but I mean, he dropped the ball.
He might have, or we just succeeded to a level that was unparalleled. Wow.
Yeah, but that's why you got to be prepared.
That's right.
I mean, to not know that Tessa Bonhomme, an Olympic gold medalist, was a right shot defense. I'm sorry, that's inexcusable.
One of the great Canadian athletes of all time. For you not to know that is inexcusable.
So you're going to have to do the golf now. Like, Karen, Tessa, too. They got Jeff's dander up, didn't they?
Yes, they do. Well, I think the O-Dog's on his way down to Georgia right now, so he's going to be playing golf all week, and he'll be back next week. Noodles will be back tomorrow. As for Masters and his notes, were you down at the skate today, down at MasterCard, and Matthews was back still in a red jersey, but he keeps skating. I think from a story's perspective, if I'm an editor or if I'm a producer, Mitch Marner is the story for me. Like, what this guy has done in the second half, I don't think it's getting enough attention.
But I've already wrote that. How many times can I write it?
I think it's a daily occurrence.
Just keep writing the
absolutely,
same story every day?
Because it was a daily occurrence when he wasn't playing well enough the first two months.
Wrote, like,
and I was a part of that conversation, too. I was saying he didn't play well enough, and he didn't have a great end of the season last year. He underperformed in the playoffs. It may have been mono. It may have been the injury that he had. He did not play well against Washington. That whole line was awful. But that kid is playing some pretty quality hockey right now.
I agree. I've written so much about it and about how he's connected with Kadri. But like, there really is a big difference. Like, I just remember It was like mid-December, and they were playing in Minnesota, and he hadn't scored. I think he had like two or three goals at that point all year. And I remember I went and did a story and talked to him and William Nylander because both guys weren't producing. And that was like the low point for me of his season because he didn't look the same. It wasn't just the fact that like he wasn't putting up numbers, because scorers will always tell you, you know, if I'm getting chances, eventually it'll come. He wasn't getting anything. And then it's almost like he started playing with Kadri, started coming a little bit on the power play, started to get a little bit of luck. And now it's like he looks like, I don't know, he just looks like a completely different player. He's creating just about every night.
So two things I would say. You know, Mike Babcock has said that Mitch Marner's a player that can drive play from his position, which I think we all see and know it can. But, you know, the term sophomore jinx, you know, we always hear about the sophomore jinx. Do you know what the sophomore jinx is? It's the rest of the league adjusting to the rookies. And then you got to adjust back. And it's a real challenge because when you come into the league and you're a good player, the rest of the league goes, okay, what do we got to do to shut him down? What do we got to do to play against this player? You're not an unknown quantity anymore. And that is a factor for players. So even though we're in the first half of the year, and he had to go through that. Mm-hmm. He had to go through that, and he's come through it with flying colors.
Well, yeah. I think he got in his own head a little bit. Like, he came into the year talking about, like, I need to shoot the puck more. I need to be more unpredictable. And what he's so good at is, like, he sees the ice, and, like, he can create things with his vision. And it's almost like he started thinking too much. And I don't know what else it is. Like, maybe you have this crazy record-setting rookie year and you start getting a little, I don't know, you think it's going to be easy. And you I don't know, maybe you take your foot off the gas. I don't know.
I don't think the players think it's easy. I really don't.
Subconsciously?
Mitch Marner knows how hard it is, but now the other teams are playing you harder. They're circling your name on the board, and they're saying, don't let that guy beat us. And that's why your second year is so hard. Because you have to go through that process when you're not new anymore. And they're saying, shut this guy down, be hard on him, be heavy on him, whatever you got to do to shut him down.
Well, and now without Matthews, it's amplified that much more.
And you got to learn that.
And he
has.
You got
to learn that as a player.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he has. And I think from a psychological standpoint, in a way, it can maybe be a little bit more difficult if you're struggling yet your team continues to win,
yes,
which is what was happening earlier in the year, where he wasn't putting up numbers. And coming into the year, he was aware of his standing within the team. He knows how important he is. Mm-hmm. He's one of the big three kids. That's what drives this team for the most part up front. He breaking records last year as a rookie, putting up big numbers. He's aware that this can be a contract year because they can extend him this upcoming summer. It's first time in his pro career where he's walking into a contract year, yeah, technically, and he struggled offensively. He struggled putting up points, and that's what he is. He's never going to be a Selke candidate. He's a guy who's going to have to create and drive a line, and while he was doing that, his team was still winning games. So that was kind of getting lost to an extent, which I could see that being a bit of a hurdle for
him to
overcome.
Yeah, it's like you feel like you're not contributing, right?
But yes, man, is he contributing now.
But he's putting
up big, big numbers. He looks dominant every single night.
Well, it's not so much now because he's been playing with Nylander at center, but I really think that the Kadri thing is big in the scope of things. Like, when you're playing with Bozak and Van Riemsdyk, you're basically responsible for making everything happen. When you play with Kadri, it's like suddenly you've got a guy who's got some creativity, who's got some skill, who can shoot the puck, who can create things for you.
I'm not convinced that line's getting back together.
I think it is.
I'm not convinced.
Who, Marner, Bozak, and Van Riemsdyk?
No.
The Marner, Kadri, Marleau.
Oh, I think for sure.
Because I believe Babcock, since day one, has proven this. He wants Marleau, Kadri, Komarov to work so badly.
That's changed.
He wants it to work. We just saw it on Saturday night.
Yeah, but that's because of matchups. That's because he wanted that line to go against Crosby.
But guess what's going to happen come playoff time?
Yeah.
Guess what they're going to play is a potent top line. I believe he wants that line to work.
I don't think so. I think he envisions having a fourth line of Komarov, Plekanec, and Kapanen, and he can use that group to go against anyone. Like, he can feel like, if I put those guys out for a D-zone draw and, I don't know, Bergeron comes out, I'll be okay. Whereas before, like, he looked at that fourth line with Moore and Levo and Martin, whoever, and he would be scared to death. Like,
okay,
I just don't think that's gonna...
I don't disagree with
I've the, been thinking the about this.
The ability to have a fourth line that you can trust is not as important as having a second line that you really, really trust.
Yeah, but do the lines. It doesn't work.
Why not? Marner just reverts back to Bozak and JVR, and Brown moves down to the fourth line.
No, I don't think Brown moves in with Bozak and Van Riemsdyk, and Marner stays right with Kadri and Marleau.
And then he has four lines he can trust.
He, you know, everybody said he was stubborn, he wouldn't change and everything. back to your point about Marner, but when Marner's struggling, you're trying to find a way to get him into the lineup and get him going. You know, Mike deserves a lot of credit for handling that situation. And then once he felt comfortable that, okay, this is the time to put those guys together, you know, back in January, it's gone. They're quicker, they're faster, and that's what they were looking for. I don't think Mike, I agree with Jonas, I don't think Mike is looking backwards. I think he's looking forward, and he sees the impact of those guys.
I hope you're right, but I feel like his comments about Pollock is another example where he has a belief that Pollock gives him a better opportunity
to
win.
He will be playing in the playoffs.
100% he will be. But when Pollock was struggling, he was like, okay, I got to play Carrick, and I'm going to play Carrick, and I'm going to take Pollock out. But I believe in the back of his mind, he likes what Pollock represents. And what I'm suggesting is, I think Babcock, in the back of his mind, now it may not get to this point, and maybe he's moved beyond this, but he looks at Marlow, Kadri, Komarov as three forwards that he trusts, maybe more than any other forward outside of Matthews.
And Hyman.
But he looks at them and says, that's the line I see going up against Bergeron. That's the line I see playing.
I would dispute that, because I think what they did before Matthews got hurt is they were just going their top two lines against anybody. And what
it was working for them.
And what it did, it started forcing opposing coaches to have to choose between, do you guard against Matthews or do you guard against Marner? And it was like that Kadri-Marner line was so dangerous that coaches, like, I remember there was one game where John Cooper didn't know what to do, because he was like, well, how should I use Hedman and Stroman against Matthews? Okay, I'll do that. And then the Marner line starts to burn you, and it's like, okay, well, I got to shift. You know what I mean?
Like, idea of being aggressive and proactive.
It makes them more dangerous.
But in the past, every coach can be reactive. Like, every coach can look at it and say, well, instead of me forcing that guy to do something, I'm going to let him put his line on, and then I'll react to it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that happened for Mike Babcock, that is that, and I think Kadri's been terrific for this team. Like, I mean, he's so competitive, and he wants that. Like, he's a real competitor. I think he just rounds up. But the other part, that game when they played against Boston and they got absolutely dominated, it wasn't even close. It was an annihilation.
It was the worst Matthews game.
But the whole team got annihilated. The whole team got smoked. I think that was a real point of learning for that team. This is what a good team looks like. This is how a good team plays. This is how a good team digs in. And I think from that point forward, the Toronto Maple Leafs, like, whatever, all their players have just said, this is where we're digging in. And that makes it really hard when you got everybody. And I think Saturday was a good example against Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh comes out, they're controlling the play, they get the power play, but then Toronto dug in. And once Toronto dug in, Pittsburgh didn't have the same type of traction.
So a surprisingly quiet night for 87 on Saturday night. Sid was really quiet. Phil was pretty quiet, too. Yeah. Obviously, one of the stories that came out of Saturday night was the Dumoulin goal and goalie interference. We'll talk about that throughout the afternoon. Ray Ferraro will join us just after 5. Darren Dreger in studio in the 6 p.m. hour. Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Red Hot Raps at 5:30. We'll look back on their weekend, the significance of that win over the Rockets, and some recent news on DeMar DeRozan. We'll tell you about that next. Corey Connors will join us, Canadian golfer. He was in the lead through 54 holes over the weekend at the Valspar and did not have himself a great afternoon yesterday. And by the end of it, NBC couldn't find him. They weren't trying to find him. They weren't going to show him. It didn't matter. I mean, he could have geared down and went streaking down the fairway, and NBC would not have shown him, because Tiger was in the hunt, and Justin Rose was in the hunt, and Patrick Reed was in the hunt. But we'll catch up with Corey Connors in about 20 minutes, get his take on his experience over the weekend, where he takes it from here, what it was like to have Tiger lurking as you teed off on one in the lead yesterday afternoon. That would have been a very cool experience. Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Raps, will join us just after 5:30. DeMar DeRozan won his 5th Player of the Week award in the Eastern Conference. And they had a great week last week, a great weekend. The Knicks game was kind of irrelevant because you knew what was going to happen beforehand. The Knicks are just openly tanking and they're injured.
That's what I chose to watch instead.
You're watching the Knicks game
and
yesterday.
A little bit of spring training, which is good.
Ugh.
But wait a second. I'm going to stop.
Wait, you
right
were
now.
Watching like the Valspar Championship.
Here's what I want. There's drama, okay? So there's no drama in a Knicks Raptors game, and there's certainly no drama in spring training.
Yeah, but
so what the hell were you thinking about on Sunday?
Okay, so two things. One, spring training, I need to start getting up to date for fantasy baseball.
Okay.
So you're watching it. Jays, was it Jays Pirates?
Yeah.
So I was two of the 30 teams, but you're getting up to date on things.
And then the second thing is I didn't get to watch the Raps-Rockets game, so I wanted to catch up and catch up on some Raps.
Okay.
So that's
fine. Now, listen, you're watching something.
You should have gone. You should have gone and watched the D League game. That would have been better than watching the Raptors and the Knicks.
That's right.
I mean, I see Raptors Knicks, and I just go no.
No, it's a guaranteed 20-plus win night.
Not happening.
That's what's
happened. It's weird, like, to be a fan of a team that's in that position now.
And spring training. I mean, today's March 12th. Teams are naming their starting pitcher. It doesn't start for another 15 days.
Yeah, more than that, I think.
Well,
yeah,
Stroman's not going to be the...
But everyone knew that.
No, but I keep reading. Oh, the story. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, let's get to the season. I'll wait till opening day.
Well, they haven't announced who's actually going to start against the Yankees opening day because Stroman was believed to be the guy, but now he's got the shoulder inflammation. And I like the reports out of Dunedin that... Gibbons announced he wouldn't be starting, and Stroman wasn't happy about the news. Like, just let everyone know that he was really still trying to grind to get back, as if it's his decision. Like, they're going to make the call. They don't owe him anything. They should take it slow with him. And I don't think it'll be Sanchez. It'll probably be Estrada, maybe Hap. But if Stroman pitches in that series or the second series, I believe, against the White Sox, then who cares? You know, you're still going to get your 30-plus starts in over the course of the year. The rotation will catch up to itself. But, yeah, we're still over 2 weeks away. You know, the news is the injury problems, though. Now Donaldson,
I know,
who's had the shoulder problems to begin with, and they cited dehydration the other day, but they had an off day on Sunday. He was scheduled to play today. He's not. So no one's really buying the whole dehydration thing. The concerns are that Donaldson's injured again, just like he was last year in spring training, and that basically completely wrote off the first half of his season. By the second half, he was the bringer of rain again and MVP caliber performances in production. But if he's got lingering issues, if Stroman has lingering issues, Tulowitzki might go on the 60-day DL to start the year. There could be blister problems at any point with Sanchez. It's tough. It's tough to be optimistic about the Blue Jays.
Well, and the Donaldson thing would be bad if he was out for a bit, because they took this chance, I guess it's fair to say it's a chance, by not trading him in the offseason. So you're basically saying either we're going to be good and we'll keep him, or he'll play well and we can trade him. But if he's hurt, not only do you not get his production, suddenly, like, trading him is not going to have any value.
Well, if he's injured, you're not going to be able to trade him.
Right.
No one's going to take him on if he's
this
injured.
This was part of the gamble.
Yeah, absolutely it was.
But he was...
We talk about gambles, though, and I mean, you look at a team, and I think a manager's job, you know, the executive's job, is to look at your team as what it is, not as what you hope it is and what you planned on what it is. And to me, I don't know how anybody could look at the Blue Jays and think they're a contender when you look at what the East Division is.
They're not.
Okay, so why are you hanging on to Josh Donaldson?
Fans?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it.
The fans are not dumb.
That's what we've been arguing. Like,
the fans...
It's an insult to fans.
I agree with you, Jonas.
Dumb.
The fans are smart. And you want to know, so this whole idea about the fans, they know what's real and what's not real.
Yeah, they're playing them like dummies, though. I don't even think this is at the GM level. I think it's higher than that. I believe it's about the fans. I do believe it's about the amount of people that have been
fans
walking into the
dumb.
Rogers Center. I'm with you.
Because this is like, for a second wild card is basically what this is all about.
That's what you're hoping for.
What else? Like, are they going to beat Boston or going to beat New York?
Well, I mean, sports, crazier things have happened. You can't completely write off the whole season.
Can I tell you what happened? When you start off, okay, just that idea, if you're in the front office of an organization, you start, crazy things have happened. You never know. I'll tell you what, that person is gone.
That's not the way these guys actually think. Like, I have too much respect for Shapiro. They're analytical. They don't actually believe that. What I'm saying is they're hoping that people can buy into that. They're hoping that people can sell that. And hey, anything could happen over 162. Baseball's a wild sport. There's a lot of parity going on. I don't believe they truly believe that. But I do think the ticket sales
factored into
the Donaldson decision.
Well, then if they don't believe that, then it's a bad gamble on Josh
Donaldson. It is. It is. I said this for months leading up to it. You either sign him long-term this offseason or trade him.
Because his value is never high.
Absolutely. And they didn't do it.
And they didn't either.
They didn't either. And what they're going to probably do is be on pace for 80 wins, 75 to 80 wins, and try to trade him in July if he's healthy. And you got to hope that he's playing well and he's healthy, and then you can get a haul back. You'll be able to get a haul back. And they're going to turn it over to the Vladdy Guerrero era. He'll come up in late August, and it'll be his team. And that will trigger a new marketing campaign, and it'll be the next generation. They'll do what the Leafs did 2 years ago. That's what's going to happen. As for the Raptors, though, again, they're now 3.5 up on the Celtics. Kyrie Irving injured again over the weekend. Looks like the Raps are going to cruise the top spot in the East. We'll talk about them in 2 minutes. All right, Corey Connors will join us in about 10 minutes. We haven't even mentioned the guy who actually won the golf tournament over the weekend.
His second PGA Tour victory.
Paul Casey. Like, nobody cares about you. Nobody cares. You won the tournament. And it's like, meh.
And he talked about how great it was to have Tiger back in contention and in the hunt.
That said, I think he was pretty happy that Tiger missed that putt on 18.
Oh, for sure he was.
You know, it's cool to have him in the hunt, but don't get crazy here. Let's make sure I still win it.
Yeah, it's easier to say we're really happy he was in the hunt when you've won.
When you've actually won. The hunt is over. Yeah. There's no more hunt.
Yeah.
I'm not hunting anymore. But the Raptors went 2 for 2 over the weekend. Obviously, the big game was on Friday night against Houston, and it felt like it was going to be a runaway, like those games against the Celtics and Cavs earlier this season. And Houston made it a game in the second half. Raptors held on for a win. But they sweep the season series against Houston. And they competed pretty well against Golden State. They've beaten Cleveland recently. They've beaten Boston recently. They still have 2 more games against Cleveland, 2 more against Boston. But they're going to cruise to top spot in the East. Barring some crazy injury problems, they're going to cruise to top spot in the East. And they are definitively the best team in the East. I mean, it's not even up for debate, especially when you see what the Cavs just did
in
L.A.
Blown out.
They look brutal right now.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get into it with Dwayne Casey in the at 5:30 in that hour. But the interesting thing to me, and I think that when I look at the Raptors and I look at what Masai Ujiri did in the offseason, he said, we don't have to change to change. He had a real belief that they could do that internally through the coaching, through getting players to do it. I think it is a great management model to go and investigate. I would love to sit down and understand, number one, it's great to say we can change from within and how we play and how we get more out of other players and what we do. Mm-hmm. But to embrace that and to be open to doing that and to manage it like Masai has done, I mean, I think this is one of these great management cases in sport.
There are two things he knew, or likely knew, or believed in, that was not getting enough attention, or any attention. He knew that he had these kids coming that could supply him with the best second unit in the league,
yep,
which they have. He obviously believed in Van Fleet, he believed in DeLon Wright, and Siakam, and Poeltl. And I think he also had an accurate read of the rest of the Eastern Conference. Because I remember talking to him multiple times towards the end of the year and into the offseason last year. And it gets back to our previous conversation about the Jays, the idea that anything can happen. He wasn't saying, hey, anything can happen with our team, but he was saying anything can happen with the rest of the East, and you can't just treat these other teams like gods. You got to go out there and punch them in the face every once in a while. And that's what's happened here. Like the East,
he also got lucky when the Cavs had to trade Kyrie, or decided to trade
But
Kyrie.
He probably knew that.
When he's talking to you in March or April?
No, I'm talking in June and July when I talked to him. He didn't make these decisions with his team in March. You know, like he decided to bring Kyle back in June and July. He did what he did at the draft in June and July. But if there's one player in pro sports that deserves the benefit of the doubt, it's LeBron. He's been to 7 straight NBA finals. Him and Tom Brady are the two guys that speak to me, more so than anyone else, and there's great players in every single sport. But LeBron's been to 7 straight NBA finals. But the rest of that team is a legit lottery team without him. Like, that team is awful, yes, without him.
Well, and without Kevin Love.
Even with Kevin Love. You take LeBron off, and Kevin Love's 100% healthy. They're the Timberwolves from 5 years ago. They're brutal.
Yeah.
And LeBron, he deserves the benefit of the doubt, but at the very least, you're a pick'em against LeBron. That wasn't the case the year before or the year before that. There are two X factors for me here in the East when it comes to the Raptors and their position. One is LeBron. Can LeBron play out of this world to a level that we've never seen before, or even replicate what he's done in years past in the playoffs?
He's been great this year, though.
He's been great this year. Oh. But I think he needs to go to an even different level with this cast of characters he's got. And the second X factor is the Raptors themselves. Can they stay out of their way? Can DeMar and Kyle be consistent in the playoffs? If they do that, I think they're going to the NBA Finals. Like, I think they match up really well against Boston, and Kyrie Irving's banged up. I'm not worried about them. Yeah. I'm not worried about Giannis in Milwaukee or the Sixers. They're the best team in the East. And as long as they don't shoot themselves in the foot, they should be able to roll here.
Yeah,
and that's something I couldn't say in years past. They were not beating Cleveland last year.
But again, we go back to being able to evaluate your team for what it is and for what it's capable, not for what you hope it could be.
Craig, he is so good at that.
Yeah.
Like starting from keeping Dwayne Casey, like way back when he first got here, trading Kyle Lowry, like that was going to happen. He was about to do that, and then he looked at his team and he was like,
no, the Knicks said no. Let's not give him credit where it's not deserved.
But there were lots of points where he could have said, you know what, this isn't my team, I'm blowing it up.
He's adjusted on the fly.
Yeah, he's just like looked at his team and said,
and Masai deserves credit for that.
Guys.
And that's an important part of management, adjusting on the fly.
Yep.
Corey Connors will join us, get his take on this past weekend at the Valspar, what it was like to have the lead after 54 holes and have Tiger Woods chasing him. We'll get you that answer next. We'll get to Mow Your Lawn Monday later this afternoon. Lots of potential suitors for lawn mowing coming off this weekend, including our next guest who will join us here in a moment, Corey Connors, Canadian pro tour player, and was largely unknown up here on tour. But when you lead the Valspar after 54 holes, you're going to get people paying attention to you. Didn't hurt that Tiger Woods was in the hunt, because even though the easy response would be, well, Tiger took away from a lot of his thunder. True, but there were so many more eyes on the tournament because of Tiger. In a way, there'd be even more focus on Corey Connors and everyone else that was in the tournament. And there's been a lot of Canadian content at this tournament recently. Adam Hadwin won the tournament last year. He finished T10, I believe, this weekend. And here is Corey Connors, who was in the lead after 54 holes and struggled a bit yesterday, but still finishes in the top 20, and he joins us now. How you doing, Corey?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. So take us through this. Now you've had a chance to digest it a bit. Looking back on the weekend, just an incredible weekend for you. How do you feel about the experience?
Yeah, obviously it was an incredible experience, and I was a little bit disappointed yesterday to not have played like I wanted to. But my best finish of the year, so that's a big positive. And getting myself into the mix and holding the lead through each of the first, second, and third rounds was awesome and felt great. Gave me a lot of confidence and really looking forward to the rest of the season.
You know, Bob Weeks, Corey, our TSN golf expert, he's really high on you. And he said, hey, listen, you know, after this, it's going to be an opportunity for you to learn. And, you know, he has no doubt that you're going to win on the tour. But, you know, it's great for other people to say you're going to learn. But what do you take out of that experience? And what in a short period of time, and I know it's only a day, what do you feel that you benefit from that experience, going into the lead and then, you know, not being able to hold it?
Yeah, so obviously feel a little bit different. There's definitely some nerves going into a Sunday holding the lead. I was really happy to have kept the lead through the round on Saturday. But going into Sunday, I think the biggest thing that I learned was kind of how you feel. And hopefully going forward, I can manage some of the nerves a little bit better and just kind of settle into the round. Kind of struggled on the greens a little bit, was leaving some putts short. And just being able to sort of be more comfortable in that position will be something that I can definitely learn from and use going forward.
With Canadian PGA Tour player Corey Connors, he had the lead at the Valspar after the first three rounds. He ended up tied for 16th. There was a chance coming down the stretch on Saturday that you would be paired, the final pairing with Tiger Woods on Sunday. That did not end up happening. Were you hoping that you would be paired with Tiger, or were you happy to avoid that?
Well, obviously, I grew up watching Tiger and really idolized him as I grew up and started getting into golf. And so definitely be awesome to be paired with him. I think maybe it was better to be in the group behind him. It's craziness playing with him, I'm sure. So many people and a lot of roars for him. So I think it might be a bigger challenge to be paired with him. Obviously would have been really cool, but I think it worked out well for me. Obviously didn't play my best, but playing with Justin Rose, another great player, and kind of being behind all the craziness that follows Tiger was maybe a little bit easier to deal with. But definitely in the future, I'd love the opportunity to go head-to-head with him coming down the stretch on Sunday.
We were laughing last week without knowing that it was going to be you that we were talking about who would be playing behind Tiger Woods because of the crowds that just follow him like a herd. What's that like? Let's say you're waiting on a par three, and he putts out, and then he walks to the next hole, and all those people start pouring away. Are you yelling at them, being like, dude, wait for me to shoot first? Like, watch what I'm going to do here. How did you react to just the crowds kind of traveling Tiger yesterday?
Yeah, I think fortunately playing in twosomes on the weekend, the pace goes along pretty quickly. There's not a ton of waiting around. Everything's kind of matched up nicely, but there's a few times and you just kind of give it a little extra time, wait for things to settle down because there's definitely a lot of movement once he makes a move or he finishes a hole. Just had to wait a little bit longer. There's not really anything you can say to people because there's so many of them trying to get a look at his next shot. I think the routing of that golf course worked out pretty well as well, that the next tee wasn't super close to the green, so people were able to get far enough away that they weren't too bothersome.
With Corey Connors, who again finished tied for 16th at the Valspar this past weekend, was in the lead after 54 holes. Take us back to Saturday night. You're in the lead. You've never won on PGA Tour. You're still a young guy. You're making your bones on the tour. You're sitting there with that kind of a field, at that kind of a course, in the lead after 54. What was your Saturday night like?
Yeah, I was fairly relaxed. I think being able to hold the lead all through Saturday helped me stay calm a lot, knowing that if I just play my game, I can sort of hang there. Obviously, it didn't pan out as I wanted to on Sunday, but I felt pretty good on Saturday night. Obviously, there's some thoughts that go through your head. Winning a PGA Tour event's quite a big deal and has a lot of perks that come along with it. I was kind of aware of those thoughts, but tried not to get ahead of myself and tried to focus and kind of go through the course and my plan, how I was going to attack things on Sunday, and just kind of practice thinking about some outcome thoughts that I was ultimately going to be thinking about while playing on Sunday and how I wanted to sort of get away from that and get myself refocused on just playing golf. It was pretty good. Fortunately, I'm really good sleeper at night. I have no issues ever falling asleep, and my fiance can definitely attest to that. So that wasn't a big worry of mine. I was able to get a nice sleep, but there was a lot of time on Sunday morning as well. Didn't tee off on Sunday until 2 p.m. So there's kind of a lot of time. Went through my normal routine in the morning, and I got up to the course, and I felt pretty good. And yeah, I was excited for the day. I knew it was going to be a fun day, but a challenging day for sure. With so many great players close to the lead, and ultimately didn't get off to a great start and struggled to get the ball into the hole, but yeah, it was a great experience overall.
Well, I think you put yourself on the map across the tour and certainly up here in Canada. A lot of people were tracking you, and we look forward to seeing where you take it next. And congrats on a great weekend, and I'm sure we'll chat again down the road. Thank you for this.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
There's Corey Connors. Good sleeper. Good sleeper.
What you think about, too, just what he talks about playing at 2 o'clock, teeing off at 2 o'clock. So you have all that night, you finish your round, now you got all that night to be thinking about this. I mean, I'm really impressed with the fact that he talked about the nerves, managing the nerves and everything that went with it. If you've never been in that position, how do you know how you're going to deal with it and everything?
That's a good point.
And, you know, and I mean, Bob Weeks to me is, so good. And listening to him talk about Corey Connors, I mean, he really believes that he's going to win because he's so talented. But now you got to go, you learn from that.
Now you really got to win. Yeah. And the same thing with Tiger. We're all like, he's back. He didn't win.
Yeah.
You know, you got to win to truly be back. Tiger doesn't finish second. You know, when he was at the top of his game, he was winning tournaments.
Did you see that little stat that they said going into the final round when he was within in the top five going in or leading or within?
He's got a lead. Like when he was at his height, if he's leading, he wins. Right. If he doesn't chase that well,
but I think there was only like he was like 69 times he had won, and everybody there was one each of like seven times. Yesterday right. would be the eighth.
Yeah, exactly. He was never known as a guy that was kind of chasing. He was always in the lead after 54, yeah. and it was over. Ray Ferraro and Dwayne Casey at 5:30.